We hear so often today that church and politics don't mix. We do know that the founders of America wrote the First Amendment, which said, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Historically, that was understood to mean that there would be no national denomination lording it over the other denominations. But should Christians be involved in the political process? Dr. Gregory P. Seltz, the executive director of the Lutheran Center for Religious Liberty, based in Washington, D.C., fights for religious liberty in America out of his D.C.-based office. And he is the speaker emeritus on the Lutheran Hour. I'm Dr. Jerry Newcomb, and this is Vocal Point, and we welcome back Dr. Gregory Seltz. Greg, great to have you back on the program. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, Jerry, always a pleasure, man. Always a pleasure.
Yes, I really enjoy talking with you. So a lot of people say that, frankly, the church shouldn't get involved in politics. I wonder if in some ways the main people who are saying that are the essentially the atheists and the humanists who just want to run everything and run roughshod over our rights.
Well, and I struggle with this with Christians all the time because, first of all, you know, when it talks about give to Caesar what is Caesar's, give to God what is God's, when Jesus gets caught in that political intrigue in Matthew 22, people forget, though, that in America, the citizen is Caesar. So, you know, in the ancient world, you had, you know, they were the authorities. So even when we pray in church, you know, we pray for our governors, we pray for our magistrates. It's not this in the context of America, they're the servants to the citizen. So by definition, you've been given a tremendous blessing in America as Christians to live self-governing, morally directed, Caesar type of lives over your own life, and their job is to undergird your liberties. So in the American context, you've been given this blessing. Now, we could lose it, and then they could be on top, and they could be telling everybody what to do again. I don't think we want that. I don't care if you're a Christian or a non-Christian, but in America, that's that, and that's the better way to biblically apply Matthew 22, because America did something radically different. It made the individual citizen the key to the American Republic.
So you're saying that not even the Constitution itself is Caesar, but we are. In other words, we're the ones that have the rights. Now, what would you say if somebody said, well, actually, in the American context, the Constitution is the governing document of the land?
Well, it is the governing document, but it's the governing document, if you understand it correctly, as the limiting document of government coercive power. So in that regard, again, its sole goal of limiting the power, and there are legitimate things government needs to do. We all agree with that. The Bible actually defines that. It's typically a law and order type of thing, Romans 13. But the point is the founders understood that in the sense that it's a governing document, it's a governing document that limits the government so that we as individual citizens can be free. Now, again, like Franklin said, we've got a republic. If we can keep it, that means citizens have the responsibility of living self-governing, morally directed lives. And we would even say motivated by your faith. That's where, you know, the government should have no role in that regard. But again, like you said, it's a radically different way of looking at it because the government is the object of limitation in the Constitution.
Some pollsters have said things like, well, frankly, there are a lot of Christians who are not even registered to vote. And then there are a lot of them that don't even show up and vote. And then also there are many who don't even vote in the primaries. And I heard one expert tell me one time that when you vote in a primary, you are actually having 10 times the power than the normal vote in the general election, because the primary is often where the real battle takes place.
Well, and I agree with that. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, democracy, well, again, we're a constitutional republic. We're a representative democracy. It takes effort. The harder part, I think, is that most Christians that I know, we tend to every 2 years get involved, and then we go back to our lives. What we're dealing with on the Hill today is kind of a secular group of people that they do this 24/7. 365 days a year. And that is that's where I think the usurpation is coming. There's power to be had because most of us don't live with politics as our number one issue in our life. It's a secondary issue. And if the politicians understood their secondary role in our lives, we'd be fine.
I see what you mean. I mean, in fact, they are public servants. They are
right.
There at our, behest, if you will. But a lot of times you feel like, no, we're powerless compared to these people who are politicians. And they pass these bills and they're spending money like there's no tomorrow,
right.
Bankrupting our children or our grandchildren. And it's like, wow, what can we the people do about this?
Well, and that's where taxation, without representation, although the two big issues for the colonialists and our early church, the early fathers of our country were religious liberty was key. Conscience rights were key to your citizenship. And then, of course, taxation. And you and I both know that taxation, once it gets out of control, that's when they become the rulers because they just pass these bills and then they demand that you pay the money. And the early founders of our country realized taxation was going to be the issue. And when did the federal income tax actually come? It was relatively recently.
1913.
Yeah. And most people think it's been here since 1776. And again, that just shows once we allow them to confiscate, they never stop. And I think we have to start pushing back on some of those things for the sake of everybody's freedom.
But it is frustrating, though, to see the politicians doing exactly the opposite of what you want them to do. And by the way, along these lines, some people have asked me, well, do you have a voter's guide? And I said, well, no, I don't have a voter's guide this time around. But here's what I recommend. Just take our local newspaper and they say to, here are 10 different people that they say you should vote for. Vote exactly the opposite of what they advocate, and 90% of the time you're going to be, biblically correct.
Right. Well, and that's the case because what we have created this notion. I always tell people that in the American constitutional experiment, there was differentiation of church and state. But by the way, that's a New Testament ideal. But the point is that the church and the free people, free citizens, are on the top, and the government was to be on the bottom in a very limited, focused way. Well, guess what? The government officials don't like that arrangement. And so that's through the policies and taxation, all that. They're flipping it upside down where we're there on the top again. They're the important people, and the rest of us kind of work for them. Well, as you said, when the newspapers align with that, when all the politicians align with that and everybody's on the same team, well, then just vote the opposite of that.
So how do we mobilize Christians to get involved in the process? Because if more did and voted their biblical values, we could help turn things around in America.
Well, the first thing to do is to make sure you understand what the state's role is. And I think that's one of the biggest misnomers today. We have this notion that the state is a benevolencer. It's supposed to be in the job. It benevolences our society and it makes everybody nicer and it gives lots of money and everyone lives a better free life because of it. No, that they actually are a bad church. Church is the benevolencer and they're worse government. So whenever you're giving them their money to do nice things, you're going to get very little bang for your buck. So the first thing is just stop thinking that that's their job. Start thinking about what you as a citizen could do, living freely with your neighbors, caring for your community, and let that be the place where you spend your energy. And then vote for them to do the basic things you think they need to do. And law and order is one of them. Right now in every city in America, I throw out all the politicians that are in our cities because they're doing everything but securing the rights of the citizens of the city. Black, white, and every person in between. And so that's the government's main job is undergird the rights of law-abiding citizens. Vote that in.
Well, it's interesting. You look at the example of the borders, and this
right.
is really crazy.
Exactly.
But in Texas, they're basically trying to expel or to, prevent, an onslaught, an invasion, if you will, of just all these people who come in who are not being vetted and so forth, even putting up barbed wire. And then the federal government turns around and sues them saying, right. No, you can't have that, you know, cut that wire, cut that razor wire. And people are coming in. It is just like, you know, Rome in 410 AD, you know, with the Visigoths or whatever. Or was that the Huns? I forgot. But anyway, yeah, you know, we're being overrun in America.
Well, and because people want to be nice. And I always tell people the church is the place where we visit the stranger, we visit the folks there. But law and order is still law and order. So we ask that the government do its role, which is to keep law and order, so that criminal elements can't come in and abuse our kindness. Well, you're seeing that out in California now. Did you hear about this where they have squatters now? They have people who are professional squatters from other parts of the world who sneak into our country and then start to target houses and take them over so that they can use them to benefit themselves and make money. It's because they're using our benevolence against us. Well, why? Because the government is demanding, is setting the stage for, or setting the limit for what benevolence is, or setting the standard. Never let the government be the benevolencer, or you're going to get into this kind of trouble where law-abiding citizens now can't even get back in their own houses in some places when these things are starting to happen. That's the kind of nonsense. When you start to use the coercive power of the government for benevolence, that's an oxymoron. I always tell people this. April 15th, if that was a benevolencing day and you couldn't pay your taxes, they wouldn't do anything. It'd be like going to church and not putting an offering in that day. You walk out of church, you may feel guilty, but the church isn't going to run you down and confiscate your wages. But if you don't pay your taxes on April 15th, they will do that. Well, you can't do benevolence when there's a gun to your head. And again, just voting for the differentiation of the government's work and the benevolencing work of free people, we could get back to a healthier tension there, I think.
How about any comment on moral issues like abortion?
Oh, yeah.
Abortion is a prime example.
Well, and the funny thing about this abortion issue is I keep telling people what we Christians are really saying is that the government cannot declare innocent human life as not worth living. And what they're saying in abortion is, no, if that child is in the womb all the way up to the 9th month now, we can say it's not a human life and we can do with it as we will. We can treat it like garbage. Well, again, all we're saying is whatever we're dealing with the moral issues of abortion, you can't say it's not a child. You can't say it's not a human being. And so what we do with innocent human beings defines us as a culture. Same thing as when we get older, same thing as when we're ideologically out of step with the culture. What the other side is saying, the government can determine whether your life is worth living or not. Folks, you don't want to go there with the secular power or the power of the government. And that's the ultimate battle of the abortion pro-life issue. Then how to apply like meaningful, I call them lesser of two evils. Like if the mother were to die, if you didn't abort the child, that's not that saving the mother's right and aborting the child's aborting the child is right and saving the mother's. What did I say? That's not saying that aborting the child is correct. But what it's saying is it's the lesser of two evils. It's the lesser of two things because you have to do something. But you're starting with the premise that both are human beings.
But 99% of the abortions have nothing to do with the
exactly,
you know, with
the
mother, you know, being, you know, at risk. Now, maybe, let's say 2% deal with about rape and incest, something like that. So you basically 97% of all the abortions have nothing to do with the life of the mother, rape, or incest. So
Correct. Essentially,
you know, it's an amazing thing, especially when you consider that there's so many of them. Okay, well, we basically are out of time. I have enough time to give your website. It does. It does. Maybe a 30-second closer from you after I give your website, lcrlfreedom.org. Could Christians make a difference, you know, in greater ways if we showed up and voted our biblical values?
Yeah, we have to, and it's our responsibility. We have citizenship here in America unlike any other time in history, and if Christians don't exercise that, God's moral teachings are the boundaries of civility, so let's be part of that. All legislation is arguing morality in the public square. Let's be the voice that of civility and humanity for the sake of the culture. That's our role.
Dr. Gregory Seltz, thanks so much. All the best.
Pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.